All right, then. Without further...
Okay, can I just throw this out there? It's totally off topic.
Apparently there is further ado. I was going to say there was no further ado, but now Logan has some ado.
The balloon finally landed, and the boy isn't in it.
Bum, bum, bum.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 196 for October 15th, 2009. On today's show, we ask, how much is World of Goo worth to you? Look at post-release demos, create our Dragon Age characters before the game comes out, and say goodbye to a group of people who have made us laugh for the past few months. Plus, our answers to your questions, what we're playing, all coming up. Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm your host and PC Gamers Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton. And on board today are our executive editor, Logan Decker.
Hi.
Who apparently is distraught about the boy and the balloon.
No. Where'd he go?
I don't know. The magical balloon man. Boy. Apparently he can not only fly, he can also disappear.
Yeah.
We've also got our previews editor, Evan Lottie.
I'm kind of hoping that balloon was sort of just the gateway to the never-ending story, like in real life. And he got picked up by one of those really furry flying dogs.
Nice.
I'm thinking more of a Phantom Tollbooth kind of thing.
Mm.
That was my favorite book as a child.
Which one?
Phantom Tollbooth.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
I read it like 100 times.
We've got dueling interns, Eric Velsos and Prentice Getty.
Hey.
Did you guys see Up?
Yes, we did. The obvious Up reference. How did we miss the Up reference? And, of course, our producer, Andy Bauman.
Hi, everybody. It's a crowded show, dude.
Yes, it is.
Full house.
We will be voting somebody off the show soon, just to make room. So on to our first topic of the day, which is World of Goo, which is now emulating the model that Radiohead used for their In Rainbows album, where they put out the album for, you know, kind of up for grabs, and they say, pay whatever you think it's worth. So it's, how much is goo worth to you? 2D Boy is the developer of the game. It's up on 2dboy.com/games. And it's a really fantastic little puzzle game. Did any of you guys play it?
I love it.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, I've played through it many times.
Yeah, even my wife loved it. I mean, like I put her in front of it and like went out for like 4 hours and came back and she was still playing it. It was, yeah. And she's not, you know, like a huge gamer. She likes The Sims and World of Goo pretty much. So yeah, it's a great game that, you know, pretty much anybody will love. It runs on netbook hardware. We our review loved it too. So it got like a 93, I believe. So it's a very, very well received game. So how much would you guys pay for World of Goo?
Well, God, it's been on sale so many times that I would sort of justify a, you know, $7-$10 price or something.
Right. I guess we should specify that by default, when it's not on sale or when it's not at reduced price, it is the normal price is $20.
Having played it, I have no problem paying $20, but I don't know, you know, what I would pay if I hadn't played it and I wasn't sure if I was, you know, going to like it.
Yeah.
Maybe
I mean,
10, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's for somebody who's not sure they're going to like a puzzle game. But you know, it's kind of a great opportunity, you know, $5 or $10. I'm sure 2D Boy would love to have that. I mean, it has gone on sale. I've seen it for as little as $5. And you know, even if you've got no money at all, you know, give them a couple bucks and have a great game.
Yeah. I should say, I want to add though that this is a promotion for the year. I guess it's been out for a year now. Has it been that long?
That's about right. Yeah.
But the promotion ends October 19th.
Yeah, so get on it.
So, yeah. But, I mean, you cannot miss the game. It's just a really fun physics puzzler. It's not frustrating in a lot of ways that some puzzles are.
It is frustrating if you're trying to do, like, trying to ace it. The really tough way where you have to preserve a certain number of goo balls or get across the obstacle course basically with it, using only a certain number of goo balls. There are some really, really tough ones that really had me wondering, how the hell am I supposed to do that? And like, you can go on YouTube and look at the solutions, but that's totally cheating. which I did. But, it's kind of like I throw up my hands, I give up, I can't do it. I can't do it. See, I want the satisfaction of seeing how somebody else did it. And it kind of blows your mind sometimes, some of the solutions. It's like, I never would have thought of that. And just to give you guys a brief rundown on what the game is, you have a bunch of goo balls of various types. They all have different properties, and you can stick them together just by dragging and dropping them and create kind of triangle shapes out of three of them. So you've got, or you can create a square as well. It's kind of like a structural engineering game almost, because you're trying to bridge over gaps and or swing across something. You swing your goo balls across something, and they get really elaborate with these levels, and the music and the graphics are kind of cutesy, but also like a kind of Tim Burton-y in their weirdness, you know.
Mm-hmm. The soundtrack in that game is fantastic.
It really is.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I would pay money for that, and they put it up for free. So.
Oh, that's right. The soundtrack is up for free. It's another thing you should check out. So speaking of games that came out a little while ago, not quite a year ago, but 2 months ago, Wolfenstein came out. It was August 21st it was released. And now it's November 15th, or sorry, October 15th. Why did I think it was November? I'm living in a time warp. Okay, it's October 15th, and a month later, they put out a demo just the other day. So do you guys think this is a good way to put out a demo? I mean, are people still? Is it still going to get people excited about the game, or has its moment in the sun passed? Is it too late to really get people excited about a game that's been out for a month?
So it's certainly a good way to do business if your game happens to be bad. but I think Logan would echo my sentiment. We both really liked the game.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
There was that initial report that nobody bought it, basically, you know, just like 10,000 people in the first week or something, 14,000 across platforms. I'm not being completely accurate on that. I'm sorry. But I would have loved to see a demo out there for it in advance. I'm not sure why they didn't, frankly.
But, well, I mean, usually it's for production or timing reasons. It does take a lot of effort to produce a demo, because they have to sometimes not just chop out a section of the game. Like, if they want to make a really impressive demo, they don't just chop out a section of the game. They kind of make a demo level out of different sections of the game. I think the Fear 2 demo did this. They pieced together several different parts of the game so they can show you kind of a highlight reel almost.
That's really, really good thinking.
Yeah. I haven't played this demo, so I'm not exactly sure how they did it, but a lot of games like Batman Arkham Asylum put out the demo, which was just like the opening part of it, and that demo almost put me off the game, because it just didn't have enough stuff to play with. The combat at that point feels really basic, even though it evolves and becomes much more complex. So creating a good demo does take a lot of effort, and doing that while you're actually trying to put the game out can be impossible unless you have a lot of resources. So that's almost certainly why they did not put it out until now. But especially given, there have been reports of layoffs at Raven lately. They were probably very resource hungry. But I mean, is it even worth it to put out a demo at this point?
Yeah, I would try anything if I was them, you know, anything at all. I mean, you know what? If they really want to, maybe they should do the World of Goo thing. Pay what you want, because it is a fun game. And I really didn't think, you know, I remember when we were doing some previews of it, and I just thought, I don't know if this is really going to come together. And I was absolutely shocked when I actually played it. And it was one of those games I couldn't wait to get home and play the next level.
Can a demo, I mean, can it do any bad? Can it do
no, anything? Absolutely not. I don't think so.
Yeah,
it looks weird, you know? It looks, yeah, it just gives it a further taint of desperation or whatever. But yeah, I shouldn't say that. It's still worth it.
Yeah, it does make you wonder. It's like, well, you know, why are they putting out a demo now? It's,
yeah, yeah. Like, why?
And there is the obvious reason I said it earlier, but it does feel kind of odd.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein was definitely one of those games, though, and I don't want to say this about a lot of games, but it just feels cool. Like, firing the KR-95 has this certain feeling to it because of the sound effect and stuff that you just really need to play. That hooks you in. It just tickles your sweet spot in your brain. You're just like, whoa, fire more guns. Mustache Nazis.
Like that's exactly.
Yeah, it like really a demo. Does. The demo might do a lot of good.
Uh huh.
No, I definitely echo that, Andy. I don't want to, you know, harp on the game too much, but that's something I echoed in the review that it was appropriate that it bared the id name because the game so like nicely like attacks that part of the brain that's just kind of impulsive and simple. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see kind of a more aggressive, like we were just talking about World of Goo, a more aggressive pricing structure for games that aren't necessarily successful, don't make a big hit first off, you know?
Well, and generally you do see them drop down in price pretty quickly if they aren't successful. You know, I would really like to see in our podcast forum, or if you want to send us in a question for, or, you know, an MP3 for next week, or give us a call and the number we'll read later. Just somebody out there who didn't really have any interest in Wolfenstein, if you just want to go and download the demo and give it a try and see if it changes your impression of the game. I would be really interested to hear from just a reader or listener out there, what your impressions are on that.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
An entirely different approach to demos, is what they're doing for Dragon Age. Because with Dragon Age, I mean, like there was no demo for like Fallout 3 because it's like a huge game and cutting out a little section of it doesn't make a whole lot of, it's difficult to do. I guess that's kind of a different situation because that's an open world and that's really hard to make a demo out of because, you know, creating a little map out of that would be tricky. But, I'd say there's unlikely to be a demo for Dragon Age, for similar reasons and because, you know, they're also probably unwilling to put the resources into it, at this point. But what they have done is to release the Dragon Age character creator so that you can get in and you can make your own, or make your avatar before you, or I guess, is avatar strictly referring to MMOs or is that any RPG?
It's anything.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure. So you can make your own character, and then once the game comes out, you take that character that you've made and you just jump right into the game. You kind of hit the ground running. And it's a pretty cool idea. And I know Eric, you were playing with it, right?
Oh yeah.
You were saying that it reinvigorated your interest in the game.
Absolutely. I had grown tired of all the, industrial metal trailers with, you know, sex and combat, and it's an RPG, you know, and I think getting into that character creator and looking at stats and skills and, well, their equivalent of skills and feats and seeing how characters could evolve, it just got me so much more excited. I probably made like 4 or 5 characters just to see what all the different paths could kind of do for you. It's very impressive. The amount of customization that can go into each of the 3 races and even the sexes of the races. It really got me excited for Dragon Age again.
So were you more excited about the visual aspect of actually creating your character, or was it the choosing your early skills, like your starting out skill set that interested you?
I'm a D&D player, and so that I was really excited to see how their skill and feat or whatever you want to call it system was going to work out. And so I was excited to see what they're going to do with the visuals, but we kind of know what dwarves are going to look like. We know what elves and humans are going to look like, but getting into that raw, you know, numbers of it, that really got me excited for the game. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, I think this is for Dragon Age in particular. I think it's a great approach to the demo, or, you know, to doing it down, because it is resource efficient for them. So they can put more effort into, you know, polishing the game before it actually comes out. And, you know, at this point, we all pretty much know how a BioWare RPG is going to play. You know, and this is going to be its own thing, but it's going to be similar in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, it's a callback to Baldur's Gate. But, you know, this lets you just kind of get your appetite wet for it, right?
Yeah, definitely. It introduces like what the kind of visual style you'll be seeing, I think, through the game, through the characters, which there's a certain uniqueness to it. It's a little darker and grittier than even most of BioWare's previous games. It really wets your palate for more.
Mm-hmm. Let me interrupt you for a second. I want to ask you guys. I've heard rumblings on other podcasts, like the Rock Paper Shotgun podcast, a little that Dragon Age is like the second coming. It's like the best game of the decade. Can you neither confirm or deny such claims?
Okay.
Stand by.
Yeah, please stand by. We have had Deslock playing it for us, and he has handed in his review, so we'll be able to talk about it soon. And actually, we're planning to have him on the podcast to discuss it when the game comes out. This approach with the releasing the character creator is something that EA has been doing a lot in the last few years. They did it with most notably, I'd say, with the Spore creature creator, which, in my opinion, is by far the best part of that game. You know, and they actually started selling that creature creator for like 10 or 20 bucks. For like the full version. There was also a demo version that had fewer parts. But, my wife's, stepsisters are I guess they're around 10 years old. So for Christmas, we gave them, I had a copy of the Spore creature creator. We gave it to them last Christmas. They're still playing with it. Just the creature creator. So that was obviously a great marketing tool for them. Too bad the rest of the game wasn't nearly as interesting. So they did it with Spore, and they did it with The Sims 3. They put out the character creator for that, so you could create your Sims and then just load them up into the game and get going. It really seems like a pretty ingenious method of getting a demo out there, you know, getting people excited about it.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, I'm sure it nets them some good pre-order orders. Yes,
absolutely, and you know, once you've created a character, do you think you're more likely to get invested in and really want to play with that character and want to get the, you know, go out and buy the game so you can take that character out for a spin?
Completely. I mean, it kind of mirrors actually, and Eric can back me up on this. When if you're playing a D&D campaign, the first thing you do, other than finding people to play it with, is you design your character. You lay that out on paper. You write their backstory. You choose their abilities. And it takes a long time, and you invest a lot in that. And once you do that, you're so ready to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty clever.
Yeah, I found that even true. Like, while I was messing with the Dragon Age character creators, I'd be like, "Oh, well, this guy's a dwarf, and although he's a noble, he's going to be a rogue, so he's kind of sneaky." And then I was thinking about, well, if he's a noble, he'll probably have really high charisma. He talks well. And so I'm already starting to flesh out stories, and I haven't touched the real game. It's, yeah, I'm really excited.
Do you guys ever do that where you create a character and then like you get like half an hour into the game and you're like, oh no, I want a different character. And you have to go through the whole thing again. Like, oh, I want a ranger or something.
Well, one thing that I find when I start playing a game like Dragon Age, in fact, is that when you get the game and want to jump into it, you kind of rush through the character creation and, you know, end up picking, stuff that you're not all that wild about. You know, you make hasty decisions just to get to the actual game. And this would alleviate that as well.
I probably would have liked to spend more time with my Mass Effect character and like, you know, fiddling with your eyebrows and things like that. But yeah, that's fair to say.
All right. Anyway, another recent development was a downloadable development, we could call it, is the Dawn of War 2 Last Stand mode was released yesterday. It's a three-player co-op mode in which each player controls a single unit, defending against waves of attackers until you're finally overwhelmed. It's, you know, kind of similar to the Left 4 Dead survival mode, although they just come wave after wave rather than... I guess in Left 4 Dead, it's kind of a constant thing, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah. So this they have, you know, wave one, wave two, wave three, and you try and see how many waves you get through. I've played a few rounds of it so far. It's a lot of fun so far. And I just played like pickup games with just random people using the matchmaking. And it went pretty well so far. I mean, like early on, you have to level up your character. So, in order to gain access to more powerful war gear and gain abilities. So like early on, I didn't really have any abilities. I played as the, Space Marine, commander. So like his only ability was to charge through, groups of enemies and knock them all down. But you know, that's still a pretty potent ability. So I used that, until I earned like the shockwave smash ability. And I think I got up to wave 7, and that's what finally killed me. I guess, Evan, you were playing some of the higher level stuff, right? When you went up to Relic?
Yeah, they let me start off a character and they let me finish with, playing some higher level guys. And you certainly have a better suite of tactics and mechanics available to you as you have, you know, more equipment, obviously. Your characters are persistent. And I can see it kind of operating in the same way that Borderlands does in the sense that You know, say my orc character is level 10 and your space marine is level 12, or you have a Eldar that's only level 1. So, okay, I'll use my lower level character to play with you so we can co-op together and so on. But there's some really kind of fun emergent things that that come out of it. Like one of the space marine abilities is like super ability. You can call in a dreadnought, which is this big bipedal tank. And if you get knocked down, you get incapacitated, you know, like Left 4 Dead, and your teammates will have to get you up. So we were, and it's score based. So you're just trying to get as long as possible and stay alive as long as possible and kill as many enemies to keep your combo up and earn more points so you can get on a leaderboard. But, there'd be situations where I'd get knocked down and my teammate would get me up and I couldn't survive because there were just too many guys, but I'd just throw my dreadnought down and die again. And then I'd get to see my dreadnought kind of walk around and do some work for me and earn some more points. And it's just kind of a gratifying way to play. I mean, I really, really enjoy Dawn of War 2. It was one of my favorite games of this year, but I think it did kind of sorely need, I mean, the co-op campaign was my favorite aspect of it. Just having things feel a little bit more manageable, because this sounds really minor, but the lack of WASD support for the game meant I was constantly going back and forth between the arrow keys and the ability keys with my left hand. And that just kind of made things more hectic for me. So if I'm only managing one character, that suddenly it's a more relaxing, more, you know, just right. More fun experience.
You're not having to zoom around.
So
I mean, it doesn't not have WASD support. It just uses the WASD for ability casting rather than moving the screen around.
I couldn't change my key bindings though. At least that's what I remember.
Yeah, I don't think it does let you change the key bindings, which is kind of annoying, but I kind of get why they did it. But I'm having a lot of fun with what I played so far. I'm looking forward to playing some more and getting into a co-op game with you, Evan, because without giving away the ending of Dawn of War 2, there is a similar situation going on where at the last moment you're rescued. And I kind of thought it would have been a great ending to that game where you're just going out, just trying to kill as many of the Tyranids as you could before they killed you. And this is that. I mean, this is exactly what I wanted.
Absolutely. I'm hoping they support it with maybe another map that has like some gun, some turret emplacements or something specific that you have to defend. Right now it's just two capture points that your only incentive to hold them earns you more points, basically.
Well, the whole thing's about points, right?
Right. But I don't know.
That's an incentive.
I'm asking right. For a different slice of content, I guess.
Right. So you want like something in the fiction, like you want a shrine to defend or a building that you can get garrisoned in or something like that?
Yeah, that might be nice. I do like the variety of the waves in that I can't remember exactly if they are randomized to some extent, but there are like every three or four waves you'll get a sort of a boss group, so to speak. They're not really boss enemies that you played against in the game, but they're sort of like higher tier units that you have to deal with.
Yeah, they're similar, like commander style units that are much tougher to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it does add some nice variety. That they'll use similar abilities against you that you can use against them. They're not quite as durable as you, but they're tough.
There's actually I don't want to spoil this for you, Dan. I might be actually there's actually a really cool wave. I remember they had at Relic where it's a mirror match. I'm not sure how late it is into the Last Stand, but you face up against identical versions of yourself as enemies. So there's, okay, you know, your three units and identical versions of those doppelgangers, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We'll have to schedule a match. Should we do that tonight, Evan?
I think that sounds great.
All right then. Also, I guess I'll have to call on your expertise one more time, Evan, for commentary on Operation Flashpoint Dragon Rising, which just came out. It's Evan is our resident Arma 2 junkie, so he's the authority on the military shooter around here. What are your impressions thus far? I know you've played a little bit of it, not a ton.
Sure, I've yet to dig into the actual retail product, so that's my big caveat there. But from my experience, it's such an interesting story, first of all, that the original developer, Bohemia Interactive, that made the first op flash games that a lot of people are familiar with and have a great fondness for, that Codemasters retained the license, in other words, the rights to that name, and they just decided to make their own game. And it's also appearing on consoles. That's, you know, a big distinction. The big question was, you know, is this still going to be a solid PC sim? You know, is it going to be intact and the experience going to be preserved? And I won't say what our reviewers spoken on. I actually haven't read our review over too much, but there has been sort of some concern over whether or not this is like a compromise between Call of Duty and a sim game. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it can invite a lot of people into the genre and sort of give them an entry point if it turns out to be that sort of experience. And that kind of was my impression, honestly. Maybe the big problem I had with it was this, the main interface is this radial menu that you use to assign orders to your troops, you know, go here, shoot this, call in airstrikes, you know, set waypoints and defense points, et cetera. And that, I mean, I think it's accessed through the mouse wheel. You sort of like hold it down and then you push right or left or WASD. And I don't know, that kind of system isn't really intuitive if you don't have an analog stick available to you, I think. It doesn't really work. But I was sort of charmed in the way that, Opflash seems to put forth a more infantry centric game. It's not so much a battlefield simulator in the way Arma is, in that, I mean, Arma 2 is a truly open game. I mean, you can truly, it's almost like the developers letting you finish the experience, letting you like fill in the rest of the script, because you have an objective and there's a helicopter here that you can use. You can just walk there. You can walk, you know, 2 kilometers to destroy the objective. You can sneak around. You can call in airstrikes, etc. Whereas Opflash is a little more, you're on the ground most of the time. You're using vehicles here and there, but it's not a truly open world game in that kind of sense. And I guess I'd also say it's certainly a much prettier game. I think Arma 2, you could say it's impressive. I don't know if you're backing up on this premise, but I mean, the draw distance is certainly fantastic, but
yeah,
it's not the best optimized game.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to turn down the settings.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, this sounds like I'm sort of compromising and apologizing for it. I probably am, but that sort of tweaking and like being flawed in that way sort of charmed me a little bit. That sounds weird, but it's just sort of the history of that genre and another like nuanced and very realistic games on a PC. But it's Opflash is unquestionably like a very pretty and detailed game in that way.
But so from your experience, you think you'll spend nearly as much time in it as you have in Arma 2?
I don't think I will. I'd certainly like the idea that this is also true in Arma, that I can play through all the campaign missions with my with non-AI, you know, with human players. I've sort of been hearing some complaints among other editors that the AI in the game is really unresponsive, and like I had to kill a guy in order to get his better weapon, you know, because he had a better weapon, carry that into the field. But you know, if I can find a good group of guys to play it with over a weekend or something, I think I certainly would.
All right. Well, we'll have to see if we can work some time in to play that too. I might jump into that one because I liked Arma, but I honestly think it was a little bit too open for me. I need a little bit of structure at least, you know, or I don't need it, but it's helpful to me if I just want to have a you know, relatively quick gaming experience where I don't want to spend an hour planning out my attack before I actually make it. You know, if I want to just get into the action, so I'll join in there and we'll see what we can do.
Sounds good.
So guys, it's time to say goodbye to our good friends, the Left 4 Dead 2 boycotters.
Farewell.
I'll miss those Aww. Guys.
Yeah.
So cute.
I know a bunch of listeners are sick of hearing about these guys, but you know, the good news is you won't have to hear about them anymore after this. They made a post Tuesday night to their Steam group community page, in which the two leaders announced they'd be shutting down the group, which puts kind of a laughable end to one of our favorite bizarre protests. The post says they've accomplished everything they can in their manifesto, which to me kind of seems like an admission that they've accomplished nothing. But then they claimed credit for Valve releasing Crash Course and all future DLC, and then encouraged their members to go out and buy lots of copies of Left 4 Dead 2 for the low, low price of $33 when you buy it in a 4-pack. A couple of choice quotes from the post was, "Our goal wasn't to steer people away from Left 4 Dead 2. It was to get Valve's attention and have them support original Left 4 Dead, we succeeded, and that's where our mission ends, nothing more or less. Which, I don't know, does that ring false to anybody?
Well, yeah, it's like, okay, they say, you know, right there, our goal wasn't to steer people away from Left 4 Dead 2, but it's like, hold on, back up. What's your group name? Left 4 Dead 2 Boycott, no Left 4 Dead 2. And it's like, do you know what the word boycott means? Like, they're telling people not to buy it and complaining about it in the beginning. And then they say, we weren't trying to steer people away from Left 4 Dead 2. It's like, well, which is it?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they're saying we don't want people to buy it until you meet our demands. And the demands they listed, curiously, the demand section of their post on the community page has been edited to now say requests, and they've removed all but one of the former demands, including the ones about how Left 4 Dead 2 should be released as a free expansion to Left 4 Dead 1, and it should be fully backward compatible with, you know, so people can play with Left 4 Dead 1 owners, and that Left 4 Dead 1 owners should get a discount when buying Left 4 Dead 2 if it was not released as a free product. None of those were met, but none of them are still on their site. So yes, they've achieved all their goals as long as you remove most of them.
I just think more than anything, this is kind of a lesson in, especially in the context of the internet, when you think a lot of people are listening to you, like how your psychology changes and then, like, frankly, like how misguided you can be. And I don't know, just like the fact that their final, supposedly final post has a Latin title, like how pretentious and insane are these people, you know?
Let's not go too hard on them. But
it's like the guy's name is Agent of Chaos. It's like, how do you expect to be taken seriously and walking target?
Let's read a couple more quotes. As for Left 4 Dead 2, we are all aware that it expands on Left 4 Dead's gameplay and takes it to the next level. Its successful sales only confirm that we'll get to slaughter more zombies in the future, not that we have failed. That's not really what they were saying to begin with, was it? I mean, that was always kind of a given.
Well, I mean, there's obviously a complete, there's just a fundamental inconsistency with everything they're saying. I mean, they completely shifted their dialogue, and a lot of people within the group that have, you know, some actual, like, rational thinking about the boycott and why they shouldn't support the game are upset with them, and they want to continue to do this. And then, you know, it's just poor thinking, you know?
Yeah. There's a riot going on now in the comment sections. They're like even more radical people.
my favorite quote was from the second part of the post. It says, as a collective, we have done more than achieve a few goals. We have paved the way for developer community relations in the future. No matter what the press or other gamers say, we have made an indelible mark upon the future of the industry. You should all be proud. We certainly are. Yeah, no you haven't. I mean, I know no matter what we the press say, doesn't make a difference to them, but Valve did exactly what they said they were going to. These guys just said they didn't believe Valve when they said they were going to, and then threw a tantrum. And when Valve followed through on the claims they made, these guys are claiming credit for Valve doing exactly what they said they were going to. That doesn't really seem how it works to me.
Yeah. That kind of thinking is just completely delusional, that you can write something on the internet. Not even, I mean, I guess they had their own forum. I haven't really checked there, and have it up there for 5 months, and suddenly you've done something on the industry. Like, are you kidding me?
Now, I'm not really one for conspiracy theories, but like if it came out tomorrow that Valve bought these guys out somehow,
Valve threatened them.
It wouldn't really surprise me. I mean, announcing the official end to the boycott a month before the game comes out and singing its praises. It's like, well, maybe they weren't bought. Maybe they're just starstruck by getting some personal attention from Gabe Newell. Or maybe they were brought up to Valve so they could be replaced by replicants. I don't know, but it's just kind of weird. I mean, it's very sellout-y. And I understand why a lot of people on their forums are upset.
Yeah, it kind of reads like an advertorial, the closing statement.
Mm.
No, I can definitely see what you're saying. I mean, these guys were, I would put my money on, these guys were just frankly charmed by coming to Valve and having that kind of personal treatment. I mean, in the photo that was taken of them with Gabe Newell, they kind of look like they're both, you know, 19, 20-year-old kids, and like one of them's holding this golden sort of statue of the Gordon Freeman crowbar, and he's smiling. Like, I mean, that's kind of my assumption, that they're just charmed and they went back on their ideals, if you can call them that.
I'm gonna stick with the replicants theory.
Sounds good.
All right. So that will do it for any coverage of Left 4 Dead 2 boycotters. I think we're done with them.
Thank God.
And they're done with us, apparently. So on with the show.
Oh, no, they're not.
Hi, PC Gamer crew. This is Jerry from Taiwan. I just have a quick question about the internet games. Well, maybe more like multiplayer games of modern days. Because I remember back in the day of like Age of Empire 1, the first. I mean, you had the option like direct IP connection. Like you guys that was the day that people are still using modem, but at least if you know the other guy's IP and you open up a game, the other guys know your IP, you can join the game. Okay, so modern days we got DSL, we got cable, we got fiber optics, and internet connection is so fast, so many game companies use kind of centralized server. Okay, you connect to their server and then they find their games for you. Okay. But why is that there's no longer the option of direct IP connection? I mean, recently I'm trying to play Operation Flashpoint, Dragon Rising. And me and my friend, we just want to play some quick co-op. You know, we just bought the game, we want to give it a shot. But we can't do anything. We thought it was our own connection, but then we found out it was their main server's problem because there's a lot of people yelling at forums like, why is there, we cannot connect, something. I don't know, maybe it's just us Taiwan here that is having this problem. But my point is, why can we have this option of, in the old days, where the internet is not as advanced, we had this option. Now, why can't we have this? IP, direct IP connection.
Well, I mean, I think probably what the problem here is that, like, the direct IP connection is kind of seen as a technical way of approaching that situation, like it's something that you really have to have some know-how in order to do. And I think a lot of developers want to take that out of the equation and kind of lower the barrier of entry to their game, and thus put all their attention on making a easy matching service or something that is supposed to, doesn't always work, but is supposed to put you right in the game without having to, you know, exchange IP addresses first. The problem being that obviously it doesn't always work. They're not terribly good at it yet.
It's true. So,
Dan, do you not see this relating to piracy at all? I'm just curious.
Well, no, not, I mean, sometimes it depends on the circumstances. I mean, with StarCraft 2, it definitely has an element to anti-piracy with it, in that they are, they're killing LAN play. I don't know if they're killing IP to IP connection. That hasn't really come up that I'm aware of. Although it would be totally unnecessary with BattleNet. So they probably won't have that either. I kind of doubt it that in this particular case that this is an anti-piracy attempt, because I'm pretty sure they still have LAN play in this one. And anytime you have a LAN option, you can just go on, you can create like a network over Hamachi or a similar program and play it, you know, and do an IP to IP connection that way.
Hey guys, this is Jared from Austin, Texas. I have a question about digital distribution. I like it, but I'm a bit worried. What if the digital distributor I use becomes a defunct entity and I lose my digital copy? What recourse do I have? I mean, I don't have any physical media or UPC label to validate my sale. So what do I do? If I re-download the software via, say, BitTorrent, I'm technically breaking the law, even though I've legally purchased a license for the software. And what about some games that require that I be logged into the distributor to play? I just want to hear y'all's comments on that. Thanks.
It seems like we get people that are concerned about this every so often. And frankly, like, maybe I just haven't been in a position where I've owned a older game that's becoming defunct yet. Maybe I just haven't been in that position. But I frankly just don't understand this concern, why people are worried, because I like to think that if that's the case, a company would make it freely available through some other means, or would give you another opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it is a concern that we do hear a lot, and I kind of think it is a semi-legitimate concern the reason I say semi is because, you know, like Evan said, I do think that in the unlikely event that Valve were to evaporate somehow, into Steam.
Oh God.
Rimshot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'd like to formally apologize.
I just threw up a little in my mouth.
Yeah. So in that event where Valve just goes away, which I just don't think it would happen. I think they would be bought by somebody else. I think the service would continue somehow. Even if they stopped selling games, I think they would either maintain an authentication server, or they would, you know, somehow put out a patch or something for Steam that would remove the need to connect to the authentication server. That's kind of a matter of faith, though.
So what you're saying is you can't stop the signal?
I have a kind of different take on it. I think that your fears are absolutely well founded. I would personally never, ever buy DRM'd music. And we've seen it happen over and over again. Amazon, you know, Amazon's tracks or Microsoft's tracks, you know, they turn off their servers and they're like, sorry. There was a sports channel. Maybe it was ESPN. They had a subscription thing, and anything you downloaded, once their servers turned off, they were like, sorry, we're shutting down that whole division. They do it over and over and over again. It's why I don't, I will not buy a Kindle, because I want to own the books I have. I don't want them to be able to take them back. So your fears are absolutely well founded. However, what I am impressed by is the PC gaming community, and by community I mean gamers and developers and publishers, have really been fantastic about responding to people as we all wrestle with copy protection issues. I'm contradicting myself, but I don't think you have anything to worry about here. The last service that went down that I can remember was Triton.
That's the only one that's gone down that I'm aware of.
Yeah, and they had done Prey, which was a terrific game, but you know, you had to contact their activation servers in order to play the game, and then they went down. And what did they do? The first thing they did was they said, look, we're going down. We're sorry, but we're going to do something. I don't know. A day or two went by, and that something was, okay, we're just going to unlock all the games.
Well, no, didn't they send everybody a box copy?
Yes, that was it. That was it. Yeah. So they made things. Yeah. Can you imagine how expensive that was for a company already going down? You know, and they made things right because they knew, look, this is like, we don't want to hurt digital distribution in its infancy. And
well, you know, we might have to check in on that, because I'm not sure who actually provided those copies. It may have been
the company that took over.
2K, yeah. 2K may have provided them.
I think you are right. They don't need the PR of like, we turned our backs on all these gamers, you know, and you know, as games grow older and older, I think a lot of companies are getting into the idea of, releasing executables that don't have DRM. You know, I think that you're all right. I share the same fears that you do. I just think that this industry has done very well to take care of its customers.
Right. So we're basically in agreement that it is a possibility. Yeah. It is not beyond the scope of imagination that you could get screwed. It could happen. Absolutely.
Yeah. But you know what? Can I just throw this into the whole idea that, well, you know, you kind of slipped this thing in under the radar, with the, well, you know, I could download a copy from BitTorrent because I bought a license to the game. Okay. Let's be clear about that. You didn't buy a license to play it, no matter how you got it. So, and the whole idea that you buy a license to a game instead of owning it is in question. And the latest legal result to come out was that no, you don't buy. Autodesk was being sued because they claimed a man couldn't sell his software because he only had a license to it. And the court here in California said, nope, you sold it, and that person owns it, so he has every right to sell it. So, but just don't think that, you know, that makes going out there on BitTorrent okay. That's a kind of warping of the law. You know, I know where you're coming from, but I just want to make that point.
Yeah. And also, I think I'd add that we were sort of talking about last week in terms of distribution systems, Steam specifically, and whether there's a conflict of interest between having content creators also sort of own the means of distribution. I think in this case, it's maybe useful to have people that create games and develop games also, you know, taking care of those systems and in control of those distribution systems like Impulse, like Steam. I don't know about Direct to Drive. I guess that's owned by IGN. I don't know. But in that sense, I'd like to think that because that's the case, you know, people that are making games will care enough to take care of those customers more. We're not dealing with a raw business entity like, you know, a television network like Comcast or something like that.
Now, when you think about it, though, like, if you were to buy, say, Arkham Asylum on Steam, and Steam went away, the majority of the revenue from the Steam sale went to Eidos. So it would probably fall to Eidos to replace that game. Like, they would probably come out and say, okay, we're going to send you a box copy. I suspect that's what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, again, we haven't, that I'm aware of, I haven't read through the entire Steam licensing agreement or anything like that. But I don't think we have anything in writing that that's what would happen. But like Evan said, no company wants that on the in their PR history to have basically screwed everybody.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Alan, aka Jester, in the podcast forums. I've been avoiding news about Mass Effect 2 and Dragon Age lately, so I don't get too lost in the hype because I'm really looking forward to both games. Today, I finally watched the videos that I've heard a lot of complaints about, the Subject 01 from Mass Effect 2, and the Dragon Age video with the Marilyn Manson song in the background. I actually really wish I had just left B and never watched them. I understand wanting to appeal to another demographic, but what about alienating your loyal fans, like myself? I'm sure BioWare no doubt thinks that the hardcore fans will play the games anyways, and seeing as I'm still going to buy both games, they're right. But do you think the backlash will be enough to lose a few potential buyers? Let me know what you think. Thanks, and keep up the great work as always.
I think he kind of answered his own question there. I mean, he's still going to buy it. He's a hardcore BioWare fan. He's the guy that BioWare already knows they've got as a sure sale. And this is their attempt to reach out to people that aren't sure sales. I think
maybe that was part of their calculated risk of doing this route. Like, they knew people would buy the game based on the Mass Effect, the BioWare brand. And then they were like, well, we can go this way and try and rope in some of these fringe people who don't really know about the game but are into Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, but how would you do that with Marilyn Manson?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that just off-put everyone?
Well, and there's a crowd that enjoys that music, but I mean, for one thing, I don't think it's BioWare that's actually doing the marketing campaign. Yeah. I think that's EA's marketing people. But I mean, from a certain cynical perspective, it is a smart move in that they do know they have a big player base that will buy it anyway, regardless of what they do. So it is trying to access a new market. I think that the people they risk losing are the ones that like RPGs but haven't really played any BioWare RPGs. Like if people who like fantasy RPGs but are relatively younger and they haven't played Baldur's Gate and they haven't played Neverwinter Nights 1 and just don't know what to expect from a BioWare game, a fantasy BioWare game. Those are the people I would say that are that could potentially be put off by these ads and not by the game as a result.
What I would do is I would email them and I would say, hey, I love your games but I just didn't like this. You know, they want to hear that kind of thing. They want, you know, to know what people like and don't like. And the number one rule when you're writing to any company is keep it as short as possible. Couple sentences. Hey, I really enjoyed this. I'm a long-time customer and I just wanted to say I didn't like that so much. But thanks for the great game. You know, again, they really do appreciate that kind of feedback and it directs what they do next. And if 100 people, 1,000 people, you know, write in with the same sentiment, somebody will listen.
Yeah, in fact, it saves them money on focus groups.
Absolutely.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Clint, old friend of Andy, podcast producer. How's it going, Andy? I had a couple comments regarding Valve and Steam. First of all, Valve has yet to really make a mediocre game that is crushed by the competition or even beat by the competition, which is why they, you know, haven't had any reason to do anything untoward. But what happens if they do make a mediocre game and competitors are clearly better? Then we might see some of these issues come up in the future. Second of all, I think that Steam is basically going to be a monopoly for the near future. with digital distribution, there's no reason to switch services to a competitor. First of all, you've got all your games on the first service. Second of all, you don't even know if the competitor startup is going to be around in the future. You want to stick with the biggest and most reliable service you can get. At least I know I do. So I think these could become issues in the future, but at the moment, I love using Steam. Your thoughts, guys?
Well, that went by way too fast for me.
Well, there certainly is a reason to switch, and that's pricing. I mean, we've seen some amazing sales. I guess I wouldn't call GOG a... Well, it is kind of a service. They have things built in there that you can access and to download and make things easier. Same thing with Impulse.
Well, GOG is definitely a download service. I mean, they're an online store. You download games. Same thing.
In the sense that he's talking about, there's a large suite of features available on Steam, but we've seen better prices very recently for the same games at the same time. Available on GOG, available on Impulse, available on Direct to Drive.
But he is right, though, that Steam does kind of try and lock you in that, I mean, not in any really devious way, but they try and make you want to stay within Steam. And for one thing is the reliability, like he talked about. There's also, just like all the community features built into Steam, with Steam achievements, for example. That's one way they're really trying to rope you in and get you to play more games on Steam. And just the fact that a lot of people use Steam as their launcher. Now Steam does allow you to import or to put any game into the Steam interface you want, but it doesn't take advantage of all the community features.
Well, I mean, curse them for doing good business, you know?
You certainly can't blame them for doing it. It's doing a great service to their users, but it is also an attempt on their part to hold, you know, keep your business, which, you know, is good business. As for the first part of the question, where he's asking about what if Valve released a mediocre game and some competitor put out a much better game in the same genre that was just crushing them. What would Valve like want to screw them over? I honestly don't think so. I mean, look at Modern Warfare. Call of Duty 1 Modern Warfare is on there. It's probably, you know, a pretty good competitor in terms of PC units sold to Team Fortress 2 or to Counter. Well, maybe not to Counter Strike, but you know, it's competition. It's direct competition to Valve's products, and yet they feature it as prominently as anything else.
I've got another example too. I mean, Borderlands is doing the 4-pack sale thing right now as well, just like Left 4 Dead. Another 4-player co-op game releasing within a month of Left 4 Dead 2. I don't know how that's proposed. You know, I'm guessing 2K came to them and said, you know, we'd like to do this arrangement too, or I guess Valve let them do it. You know, and that's direct competition within the same month, same genre, arguably.
Right. I mean, I honestly don't know what tools Valve would have at its disposal to retaliate against another developer, unless as Randy Pitchford was concerned about, unless they raised the amount of money they take from each sale, and they did that on a biased basis. That's the one way I could see them really doing something underhanded.
Sure.
In which case, I mean, there are plenty of other places that developer could go online and sell their game. I mean, they can go to Impulse, for example. Impulse actually has, I think, more EA games on it right now than Steam does. But it's definitely a potential problem. I would be kind of surprised if Valve would do it just based on their attitude thus far. Although that is not knowing exactly how much they're charging different people for their games on Steam.
Hey guys, it's Dave from Jersey. I've been listening to your podcast for about 2 years now, and I can't help but notice you are all huge NVIDIA fanboys. This really showed last week when you recommended a video card and chose the GTX 260 over ATI's 4870. Given that you can get a 1 gig 4870 for $145 and a GTX 260 will run you about $165, if they were equivalent, it'd be no choice, and you choose the ATI card. But they're not equivalent. There's no doubt in my mind the 4870 is better. Of course, maybe I'm saying that because I'm an ATI fanboy, though I assure you I'm not. I simply wonder if you're allowing your personal buying and usage preferences to cloud your judgment. Thanks.
Well, I mean, Okay. No, that's great. I mean, I don't think we're NVIDIA fanboys. I will say NVIDIA has done, has been on a winning streak for a long time. The 4800 series was fantastic. And well, I hear tell that the 5800 series is really fantastic. And you're going to be seeing a lot of those cards, in issue very, very soon. January, in fact. But no, I don't think, none of us here in the office are partial to ATI or NVIDIA. We do love the GeForce 200 series. We thought it was a great value, great power. I'm a little disappointed. I do have to admit, I was a big pusher of CUDA, back in the day, and it's like, where are the CUDA apps? You know, that has been very disappointing. And I did weigh some of my verdicts on that, you know, because it does have this great programming language. And I know ATI has its own as well, but NVIDIA was really pushing this hard and just nothing's come of it. But I think, my sense is that we're going to see a humongous, comeback from ATI with this new round. I mean, I think there's nothing that shows, confidence and audacity like releasing three different families of cards within a few weeks of each other. That's unheard of, you know. They really want to impress people with what they've got, and they really are onto something based on what benchmarks I've done so far. But I do appreciate you calling in and, you know, and calling us on it, you know, because we have pushed a lot of NVIDIA stuff for a long time, and you know, I've noticed as a gamer, you know, I'm constantly bombarded with NVIDIA messages, you know. I'm playing Borderlands right now and you can't even skip the NVIDIA screen, which goes on for a while because it's this little, you know, skit with Claptrap, you know.
Yeah, it's Pixar-esque.
I know, and I'm just like, enough, I've seen this 300 times, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the you know, I think the price differential you were thinking of between the 260 and the 4870 wasn't that much, but I would have no problem recommending the 4870. Just in that time, you know, we thought that the 260 was a better value. But like I said, I think you're going to see a very, very impressive comeback very, very soon from ATI. And I'll be all over it.
Yeah. I mean, we're actually very like opportunistic fanboys, aren't we? Like the moment the wind changes, we're on board with the guy who has the better card. And you know, every so often, like something is neck and neck, and maybe we'll stick with what we've been using for a long time. It's worked great for us.
Yeah.
But it's certainly no bias on no intentional bias on our part to degrade ATI. I mean, personally, I like the underdog. I love to see ATI come back and give NVIDIA a run for their money.
Yeah.
And it's always ends up being better for everybody.
But although I have to admit, one thing I hate doing is changing out drivers. It terrifies me going from ATI to NVIDIA or vice versa. I always seem to get problems there. And so that's the only tiny thing that makes me at home on my home system a little nervous about switching. But, you know,
I did have a terrifyingly bad experience with an ATI driver once, but, I don't think it scarred me for life, but it did leave a little bad taste in my mouth for a while.
Yeah. We could definitely say that on both sides, of course.
All right, so let's move on to our playlist segment. I personally have been working on crushing Gary's scores on Zuma's Revenge. Although I don't think either of us can hold a candle to Evan, who's actually, I think you've actually worked out how the scoring system works.
Weren't you the one on the anti-Zuma campaign? Like you
I
had
never
no
had what?
Oh,
Logan, I've converted you all of everyone in the office but you.
No, I'm not doing it.
You're still a Peggle diehard. I know.
No frogs, no Zooms, no.
Logan is like me for like I was for Peggle. I just couldn't get into Peggle.
I don't get Zuma. I do not get it. I don't understand.
I mean, like I said, we don't really understand the scoring system either.
It's not for you, man.
But Evan just lunged at me.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just the whole yeah no.
it's kind of a mindless, fun little time wasting game that you know, it's colorful and it might not have all the characters and superpowers of Peggle No, there are no unicorns in it. There's a frog.
Plants vs. Zombies, huh?
I enjoyed Plants vs. Zombies as well. But yeah, this one, you know, it's just kind of a little time waster. Evan, you, like I said, you actually seem to figure out how to actually make the scoring system work for you.
Oh, certainly. I mean, do you mean in the campaign?
No, in the challenges.
In the challenges, yeah. I mean, really, you want to have, I'm not sure what the name of the balls are, but they're these balls that activate a multiplier that generate dynamically. And you basically need to always have those active. And on top of that, you want to maintain a combo at all costs. And that's going to get you the best score, basically. And there's, so I mean,
by combo, you mean what?
You want to like every shot you make should eliminate balls, basically. It shouldn't put, you know, basically every ball you shoot should create a match of three or more. And by maintaining that chain, you're going to, you know, exponentially improve your points and keep going there. And that's really the only way to beat some of the higher level challenge levels, of which I've aced 95% of. So.
Yeah, I kind of think that's what I've been trying to do. It seems wildly inconsistent all the time. But, oh well, enough about me. Evan, what have you been playing besides acing a bunch of Zuma levels?
I've been playing, like you mentioned a couple months ago, Dan, I've been playing Monkey Island with my girlfriend, Tales of Monkey Island.
Oh yeah?
That's been delightful so far. I wasn't really aware of the nice, like, sort of camera work they do with the game where you're moving between areas and the camera follows you, and it's very dynamic. I was sort of expecting a front-facing left to right movement, but it's pretty, they put a lot of production work in that game. I've been impressed with it.
How's your girlfriend liking it?
Monkey Island is her favorite game of all time, so she's deeply enjoying it and having a great time with it.
She feels they're doing it justice?
Absolutely, so far, yeah. And she's really entertained by it, and just the characters and the voice work, and yeah.
Oh, good.
What else have I been doing? We've been playing a lot more. I played some Quake Live with Norm last night. That was humiliating and fun. And we actually played yesterday in the office. We played some Unreal Tournament, some Instagib. That was a wonderful thing to revisit. Just
yeah, original Unreal Tournament.
Yeah. But just the, I mean, just the feeling of being in midair, air strafing, you know, trying to land somewhere that you know is behind you, and airshotting somebody that's also drifting in midair, and just trying to, you know, move your crosshair in line with them and pull off the right shot.
And you have to lead them a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fantastic feeling.
I had a couple of good starts, but then I just got owned. I guess Prentice came out on top on those games, didn't you?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Not on Quake Lab.
But we'll have to get Norm up here to challenge Prentice in UT.
I'm down.
I think you could be biting off more than you can chew there. Norm's pretty good. Logan, what have you been playing?
I am continuing my torrid love affair with the Liquid Wrath sniper rifle in Borderlands, which is just the most beautiful thing to have happened to me in years. Just picking them off, those little rails way up top, you know, and just watching their little heads pop, you know, like cherry tomatoes, really makes my day. I'm really having a lot of fun with that game, and I am switching in between that with Machinarium, and just
yes,
discovering that there is so much left to be explored in the adventure genre. You know, I was thinking, by the way, the other day that people are always saying, you know, like, they call them point-and-click games, you know? But all games are point-and-click. Just, you know, in a first-person shooter, you just point-and-click faster. You know? So what gives, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean,
destroyed that argument. I just smashed it.
Wow.
Yes.
I think they're referring to the method of movement.
You still point-and-click and...
that's very true. Shooter. Very
you move true. Your cursor, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Smash with the Logan verbal hammer.
So, Logan, on that topic, have you tried Monkey Island?
No, I have not yet. I know, it's terrible. I've got to get on that. I've just been, I went through a big shootery mode, and I just haven't gotten a chance to. But definitely, as soon as I'm finished with Machinarium, I'm going to go straight to Monkey Island, and I'm not getting off.
Now it's kind of interesting because it's not actually like your typical point and click game, because you can't click and say move here. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, the controls are a little bit different. They take some getting used to, but once you're used to it, it's cool. Prentice, how about you?
I've been playing all the old, Looking Glass games, like Thief.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
System Shock.
Which is your favorite?
The original System Shock, but that was Origin. But yeah.
Thief what, 2. Oh my God. That was brilliant.
What makes System Shock your favorite?
Over the other ones?
Yeah.
Just,
why is it better, for example, than System Shock 2?
Oh, I wouldn't say it's better. I just prefer it.
Mm. Well, but what makes you prefer it?
I don't know. Kind of the old nostalgia feeling you get from, all those old kind of, cause it was still done in the, Doom style where I don't even think it's, you have to click to look up or click to look down. It's super hardcore.
Mm-hmm. So it's not quite to the mouse look stage.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, going back and playing some original Dark Forces, has kind of the similar thing. You have to use page up, page down to look up and down.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's pretty atrocious. It's amazing how long it took them to figure that out, that, you know, the mouse look thing. Because the camera obviously had the ability to move up and down like that, and they didn't use the mouse axis to do that, really. But
Do you know what the first game kind of to originate mouse look? I'm just curious.
Could have been Quake. I'm not certain about that.
Okay.
In fact, I'm very uncertain about that. But Quake is the first one I can remember doing it in. Eric, what are you playing?
Well, besides getting my butt absolutely handed to me in some Office UT.
Logan didn't do much better than you did. In fact, I don't think he did do better than you did.
No, he beat me in the last round. It was pretty sad standings. But I was craving some RPG last weekend, and my friend recommended to me Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Oh my God.
And I have been adoring that game. It's deep and it's fun, and there's stats and skills to play around with, and there's some moments that game is actually scary. I have been just really, really enjoying that game. Graphics are a little dated, but
it's a Source Engine game, right?
Yeah, it's original Source Engine.
There's only one Source Engine.
Sorry. Sometimes I think of the Orange Box Engine as kind of Source. Because Orange Box is modified Source, isn't it?
Right. I mean, Valve has been constantly upgrading Source since it came out with Half-Life 2.
Okay, I see.
So there's no Source 2, but there are many different versions of Source 1.
All right. Well, yes, it is Source. The dialogue and the gameplay more than make up for any graphical mishaps that game has. I've just been adoring it.
I remember when I first tried to play it, it was like really buggy, and I tried to play it like soon after release, but I think there were some good patches, like there might have been one or two official patches before Troika shut down.
But there's a great community out there still putting out unofficial patches, and I have yet to run into any bugs. So
great. Well, maybe it's time for me to revisit that one if I have so many games I want to play in so little time. And Andy, on to you.
I actually haven't played like a single game for the last week.
Really?
So skip over me.
Really?
I
don't know. That's just shameful.
It was porn week for Andy. Obviously.
So Andy, is there anything that you're really looking forward to?
Well, I did buy Red Faction Guerrilla in the hopes that I'd be able to get into it, but I'll definitely get into it this week. So
well, I guess enough about what we've been playing this week. What will we be playing next week, Evan? We've got a list of upcoming games.
Yes, and I'm happy to share that with you guys. Nothing too groundbreaking, eye-shattering, face-melting this week, but Dream Killer, a first-person shooter out of Mindware Interactive, you may have heard of it, may have not, is out this week, as well as a PC version of NBA 2K10, Tropico 3, Fallout 3, the Game of the Year edition. I believe that includes all the DLC, Dan, I think.
It does, yes.
I'm not sure what the price point is. It might be...
I think it's
40, 30?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's at least 50. It might be 60. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not a bad deal.
Yeah, you spend $50. I mean, like if you bought each of the DLC packs for $10 a piece, and there were five of them, so that's $50 right there. And so, if it is $50, and we'll have to verify that. But if it is $50, you're essentially getting the game for free.
Great. Oh, we also wouldn't want to exclude Nancy Drew, Warnings at Waverly Academy, and Lego Star Wars: The Complete Saga, which is a bundling of Lego Star Wars 1 and 2, which I guess that means all 6 movies are accounted for. So that's about it. I don't know if we have a pick in particular for this week.
Out of those, I'd pick Fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't played Fallout, it's, I would say no other option there. I just checked Amazon. It's $49.99 on PC.
Yep. Also known as $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just can't stand when people do the $49.99 thing.
I know.
$49.95. Drives me absolutely crazy. It's such a dumb little mind game. It's like, go away. Stop it. You want $50? I'll give you $50. It's like, you really think the 49 is going to make a difference in my head? But apparently, I mean, there must be some like marketing research that shows that people are more likely to buy something for $49.95 than they are for $50. But,
or maybe I think it could easily be, it could just as easily be that somebody had the idea at some point and it just persisted, you know, like a kind of an urban legend, you know, like, just like a subliminal advertising. You know, we find out now that the whole legend about a theater that flashed Coke ads and made people want Coke more. Well, no, that never happened. You know?
Jack Snopes.
Or don't put green on magazine covers. That's an old
well, you know, magazine wives tale they tell around the campfire.
Exactly, yeah.
It's really kind of weird. The superstitions in the magazine cover design.
Yeah. But, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think there probably is something to it where people do have a significant difference in their minds between 49 and 50. You know, because, you know, it is kind of a big jump when you, like, they think about it, but I mean, it's borderline deceptive. I mean, not really deceptive, but it's messing with your head, and I hate it. Anyway, it is time for us to go back to the work of assembling a magazine, to which you can subscribe by visiting pcgamer.com. Please remember that we need your questions to fuel our next podcast. So if you have any comments on today's show or PC gaming questions in general, please email us your thoughts in MP3 form at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Or take the easy way out and pick up your phone and dial 1-877-404-1337, extension 7724. And with that, for myself, Andy, Prentice, Eric, Evan, and Logan, this is PC Gamer signing off. I had something really smart I was going to say. Give me a moment. I don't want to build it up too much. What was it? Oh, well, it's gone. Okay. All right. So other bits that were. Oh, you know what? I just remember what it was. Okay. This is going to be a fun editing job for you, Andy.
That was a really nice closing game.
That was terrific.
Yeah, that was great. That was job. Great.
Get the number.
Yeah, I was waiting for somebody to notice the fact that I actually didn't ask Andy to read the number this time.
I was like ready. I was so ready.
Oh, shoot. I forgot the Crysis 3 engine, but we can talk about that next week.